All right. Thank you. Naomi, you're up. Welcome.
I must admit, this is my first full PowerPoint presentation, so please bear with me.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. All right. It's very tough to sit in your seat, Dr. Chitina.
Make sure the microphones
are
people
out there. Okay. All right. I'm going to cover three areas tonight, and please feel free to ask questions. The first one is the impact of ed reform on the governance of school systems, and it's ed reform is now 11 years old, so a lot has happened since then. I'm going to give a brief overview of the collective bargaining process and an overview of the open meeting law. You'll note that...
If I could just interrupt for 1 second, just
sure.
A suggestion if I could make to the board. Although Naomi will be covering the overview of collective bargaining process, I would kindly ask you, respectfully ask you to stay away from any conversation regarding negotiation strategy, which you can have an executive session at some point, and will have an executive session at some point with Naomi, because next year we have negotiations with all of our unions. So just if I could respectfully ask that.
Okay, next slide.
If I could just, Mr. Chair, yes. But if we were to fixate on an issue that some member of the board really wanted to clarify, we have an executive session scheduled tonight. Could we not move into that to discuss that issue?
Yes, you could. You could take a roll call vote to go into executive session.
Right.
And you could discuss the issue.
That's if there was an issue. I mean, I just
yes,
don't want to eliminate the discussion. We have a great resource here with us right now. And go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Next slide, please. Okay. What happened with ed reform? The major change was the change in governance. There used to be, the old statute was Chapter 71, Section 37. And what that said was the school committee is in general charge of the schools, of the public schools. And it was two sentences, and there were five pages of cases interpreting that section of the law. Well, that law was eliminated. So the school committee's role changed in a major way. Next slide, please. What's the role of the school committee? No longer in general charge of the public schools. The school committee really functions as the board of directors, and the superintendent is the chief executive officer. The school committee gets to select and terminate one person, and he's it, just the superintendent of schools. The school committee can establish a position of assistant or associate superintendent of schools, and may disapprove the hiring. The superintendent makes a recommendation. School committee can disapprove the hiring, but the school committee cannot unreasonably withhold its consent. I haven't seen any cases in that area since ed reform was passed. School committee reviews and approves budgets, very, very, very important function. And the school committee reviews and approves school improvement plans for each school. And the school committee establishes educational goals and policies consistent with the law and the Board of Education regulations. I think this is so important. The school committee has been removed from the minutia and can really get involved in the big policy issues that impact the education of the students. And the school committee serves as the collective bargaining agent, which becomes a little interesting. We'll get into it later on. There have been some cases on who can determine the transfer rights and whether the school committee can agree in a collective bargaining agreement to bind the superintendent in certain areas. Okay, hiring. Who remembers what it was like in the old days?
We did it all.
You did it all. Superintendent recommended, school committee hired, school committee suspended, school committee terminated. I had one termination hearing where I had a baby in between the start and the end of the hearing. I mean, it would take forever because everybody on the school committee had to sit, and there had to be a two-thirds vote to dismiss. It was a very, very cumbersome process. Now, the principal, consistent with policies and budgetary restrictions and subject to the approval of the superintendent, hires essentially everybody in the principal's school, teachers, instructional aides, custodians, and other employees assigned to the school. And there were a series of cases last year, Supreme Judicial Court, which said that there was initially a Peabody case in which an arbitrator had ordered that a teacher be granted a voluntary transfer, and the appeals court said in dicta, hey, what's the principal? Chop liver? You know, the appeals court said, look, you didn't even think of the principal. And let's not talk about the school committee. Let's not talk about the superintendent. The principal is the educational leader in the school, and the principal has to, that's where the whole process starts in terms of the transferring and the hiring. The principal is hired by the superintendent at compensation levels established by school committee policy. And upon the superintendent's recommendation, the school committee can hire an assistant or an associate superintendent. The superintendent hires coaches for a period not to exceed 3 years. I don't know if you were in Natick, Pat. There was a Supreme Court case involving a just cause provision of a collective bargaining agreement, and the union maintained that the school committee still hired coaches and therefore could regulate the hiring of coaches in the collective bargaining agreement. The Supreme Court said no, 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 that decision rests with the superintendent. And believe me, coaches used to take a lot of time. I remember going to a meeting in a neighboring community, and I was following the football coach, and believe me, I waited a very long time. So that's no longer a role of a school committee. And again, the school committee hires the superintendent. I'm not going to spend a long time on the replacement of teacher tenure by professional teacher status. In the back of your package, you'll see a very, very detailed analysis of the changes in the law, and it breaks down the procedures and also the standards that have been established under ed reform and all the cases that have been decided according to the different causes. The teachers, like under the old law, the teacher serves for the three previous consecutive school years. Under the new law, if somebody has professional teacher status in another community, the superintendent can agree to grant that person professional teacher status in your own community. And the notice of non-renewal is June 15th. Under the old law, it used to be April 15th. Teacher dismissal. Essentially, the process has been streamlined. Instead of having hearings before the school committee and a two-thirds vote, the superintendent, principal makes a recommendation, the superintendent sends out a notice of intent to dismiss, and the individual has 10 school days to meet with the principal of the superintendent to discuss why he or she should not be terminated. As part of that, you have to give the teacher charges, and you have to explain the grounds upon which you're making that recommendation. It's a much shorter, easier process. Timing, if you have the meeting within 10 days and the decision is made, that's the end. The person is terminated. The person can appeal to arbitration. I found many, many settlements under ed reform. It was so cumbersome under the old law that now if you have a teacher who really needs to be terminated and you've done your homework, I found that in general, these cases settle. You'll see in the outline that I think the first year they had something like 100 cases filed and only five went to arbitration. And last year they had one that went to arbitration. What's the standard? Okay. 71 section 42. You all have these pink little booklets? Do you all have the law books? Okay. 7142 is a statute that deals with teacher dismissal, and it establishes standards which are included in your outline: inefficiency, incompetency, incapacity, conduct unbecoming a teacher, insubordination, or failure on the part of the teacher to satisfy teacher performance standards developed pursuant to Section 38 of this chapter or other just cause. The big change was the teacher performance standards, and then something else that was put in the law that said that the arbitrator has to look at the best interests of the students. That was a major change, and that came from, prior to ed reform, there were so-called Needham trilogy. There were three cases. Needham school department terminated three teachers, and the standard was just cause under the collective bargaining agreement. And Archibald Cox, who just died, I guess last week, issued a decision and said, look, they told me, they gave me a just cause standard. A just cause standard deals with widgets. If I were to frame my own standard, oh, I'm sorry, keep going. That's good. We can go back. Okay. If I were to frame my own standard, I would look at the needs of the students and whether the students are learning and the impact of the parents. Parents' input, but no one gave me that standard. They just said just cause. So what the statute did was they built in the standard that the arbitrator was required to look at the best interests of the students. Major change. What happened under the first couple cases under ed reform, the arbitration cases? Nothing. The arbitrator said, oh, the best interests of the students warrants putting an experienced teacher back in the classroom. That all changed with Beverly. There was a case in Beverly. Am I going too fast?
No.
Geller versus school committee. And that dealt with a middle school teacher who had pushed kids three times and it actually hit a child. It went to arbitration. The arbitrator said he did it. He committed the offense. It was really bad. I think he should be suspended for a year and then reinstated without back pay because the best interest of the students warrants a return of a long-term teacher to the classroom. That was appealed to the Superior Court. The Superior Court affirmed the arbitration. It went to the Appeals Court. The Appeals Court said it was against public policy to return a teacher to the classroom who the arbitrator had found had committed child abuse, had assaulted a student. It then went to Mr. Geller appealed to the Supreme Judicial Court. The Supreme Judicial Court split. Three justices said, once there's been a finding that the conduct was committed, the arbitrator lacks the authority to order reinstatement. One justice overturned the arbitration because of the public policy argument. So there was sort of a split in the court, although the arbitration was overturned. And since that time, the arbitrators are doing a little dance. You know, they say, well, we don't find that the actions were that serious, therefore we're not finding just cause for termination. But the Beverly case really was a turning point. And now, when I prepare a case, I actually look at the factor of what are the best interests of the students, and can we demonstrate the impact of the students. So that was a major change. The case goes to arbitration. Under the old law, the individual could elect to go to arbitration or to court. Now it goes to arbitration. It's the exclusive remedy. And the arbitrator has to be a member of the National Academy. There are time frames in terms of when the arbitrator must issue his or her decision, but that never happens. I mean, they take a long time. It takes about 6 to 9 months from the filing of a case to actually get an arbitrator's decision. There's a different standard for assistant principals. Next slide, please. Assistant principals, department heads, and other supervisors. They may be dismissed by the superintendent after 3 years. There's a different standard. The standard is good cause, which is a lesser standard than just cause. And there was a big change in principals. Principals used to be represented by collective bargaining. They are no longer represented in collective bargaining. They are considered to be managerial employees. And indeed, in several communities, the principals actually sit at the bargaining table. A principal may receive up to a 3-year contract and must receive 60 days notice of intent not to renew. So those were the major personnel changes, and those were really the major changes brought about by Ed Reform. What else happened? It was so funny. Before Ed Reform, one of the big points we'd have to negotiate about would be smoking and whether people would be allowed to smoke in designated areas. But the legislature took care of that for us. Employees, next slide, please. There are certain statutes about school committee members and members of the administration. They must advise, put something in writing in advance, in writing, if a member of their immediate family will be employed by the school district. Some school committees have even greater policies dealing, regulating that area. And you also have 268A, which is the conflict of interest statute, which could be of concern. Student discipline, 71, section 37H, deals with drugs and weapons and assault on a staff member, permits a principal to expel a student at the high school level. The expulsion of a student from K through 8 remains the same. That rests exclusively with the school committee. And then 37H and a half, which, no, back. 37H and a half, which talks about a discipline of a student who's been accused of a felony delinquency complaint or a felony. And there's a procedure there if somebody is a threat, if the principal deems that somebody is a threat, that that person can be suspended indefinitely pending the outcome of the criminal matter. Okay. Yes.
Is there anything in the law regarding, I see this is weapons, drugs, around discipline, but around threats? I mean, that's an area that we...
Assault.
You know, we've had issues with, but there's nothing specifically in this law, in this area of the law, that goes so far as to that detail of, you know, a written threat.
An assault is, a principal can exclude somebody from an assault to a staff member, not an assault to a fellow student, and threats would be covered by your student handbook.
Okay, in
but
our policies.
There are some specific provisions in the law that permit a principal to expel, and those are very narrow.
Okay, and that's what this section of the law.
Can I add something to that?
Sure.
Having a threat in a school is a felony charge, and if it's a felony charge against a youngster, then 37H and a half would be applicable, because then you can deal with it based on the fact that the youngster is in charge of the felony.
So, oh, okay.
It just depends on the extent of what that statement is the youngster said or wrote.
Oh, whether it leads to a felony charge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The student-to-student assault is not...
The principal cannot exclude for that. It has to go to the school committee. Principal can discipline and suspend, but it's not one of the statutory provisions which would permit a principal to exclude.
Okay.
So the principal can bring it to the school committee?
Absolutely. To the superintendent. The superintendent can bring it to the school committee. Any questions? No? Okay. All right. Next slide, please. Changes in collective bargaining. I already mentioned the principals. Chief executive officer of the city, or do you have a town manager?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Your town manager gets a seat at the table for collective bargaining. And it doesn't apply where a mayor is a member of the school committee, but your town manager gets to vote just like you get to vote on collective bargaining matters. It's not required that the town manager sit in the bargaining session. That's up to the chair, but must be invited to executive sessions and must be permitted to vote. And I must say that I think that that's actually a positive change generally, because it's important to educate the town as to, you know, what's going on in the schools and how collective bargaining operates. And a non-issue now, when it was first passed, there were new evaluation standards, and if you didn't have evaluation standards in place, they were subject to collective bargaining and interest arbitration. And I'll explain to you in a little while, well, I'll explain to you now. There's grievance arbitration and interest arbitration. Interest arbitration involves a situation where an arbitrator can tell you what you're going to include in your collective bargaining agreement. That's interest arbitration. Grievance arbitration is when an arbitrator interprets a collective bargaining agreement. An example of interest arbitration, I'm sure you're all following what's happening in Boston now, mm-hmm. with the police patrolmen. Mayor Menino offered to go directly to arbitration. Police and fire have interest arbitration. what he was offering to do was to have the dispute determined by an arbitrator. So that's the difference between the two. School committees do not have interest arbitration except for this limited area of evaluation standards, and I think you have a system in place. There was a fair amount of litigation initially, and now everybody has evaluation standards in place. There are no more interest arbitrations in that area. Okay, we're moving on to collective bargaining. Next slide, please. Okay, statutory framework is Chapter 150E. Next slide, please. Chapter 150E governs collective bargaining for public employees, and you as the school committee are the employer of school employees with the exception of health insurance, and that's a joint employment situation. And I would say that health insurance now is a major issue in many negotiations. Okay, next slide, please. Bargaining obligation, what are you required to do? Are you required to agree? No. You're required to bargain about wages, hours, standards of productivity and performance, and any other terms and conditions of employment. The last two sections were added, class size and workload for teaching personnel. What does the bargaining in good faith require? Next slide, please. Meet at reasonable times, meet in advance of the budget making process. That's changing a little now because no one knows what the state is going to do. So the budget, the timing for the budget making process is sort of a moving target. You're not required to agree to a proposal or to make a concession. You do have a duty to support the agreement before the appropriating authority. So if the school committee reached an agreement, they would be required to support that agreement before town meeting. Next slide, please. Term cannot exceed 3 years, although in some places they agree to a one-year deal and then a three-year deal later. In those cases, particularly where time has passed. In other words, I have a couple districts that still don't have an agreement for this year. They might consider a different approach. Okay, arbitration. I told you what grievance arbitration is and the distinction between grievance and interest arbitration. Next slide, please. Interest arbitration, it's police and fire. Next slide, please. Strikes. Public employees are prohibited from striking. There are penalties. Some people have been sent to jail because of strikes. Also, unions have been assessed fees. A common approach now is the work to rule. What's a work to rule? You do what's required in the contract. If people have previously performed certain work and refused to do it, then an approach is to go to the Labor Relations Commission and determine whether the work to rule constitutes a work stoppage. But we don't have to worry about those things here. next slide, please. Okay, if you reach an impasse, the employer can implement the last best offer unilaterally, but you have to exhaust mediation and fact-finding. Fact-finding is a non-binding advisory process. In Reading, you have the following units, collective bargaining units. Any questions about collective bargaining procedures? Okay, we're moving on. Am I going fast enough? Okay, open meeting law. The open meeting law is really, I think, a very simple law. Who's covered? Obviously, the school committee is. Duly constituted subcommittees of the school committee and school improvement councils. Committees formed by the administration are not considered governmental bodies. So if the superintendent, for instance, has a search committee for a principal, building principal, even if a school committee member is on that search committee, that is not a governmental body. What is a meeting? Any corporate convening for which a quorum is required. A chance social meeting is not covered. The question was whether this would be a meeting or a training. And since you could be discussing some items that could impact policy in the school committee, we're holding this in a public meeting.
Mr. Chairman?
Hang on, Naomi. Pete? Yeah.
Could you go back a slide, please? Emails.
Oh, okay.
Chance social meeting.
Emails, if you're discussing policy, school committee policy, anything involving your public function, you can't do that. That's an illegal meeting.
By current interpretation of the district attorney,
yeah.
If I were to send an email to my next door neighbor discussing school committee policy, he has no other interest than to hear what his neighbor has to say, and he sends it to a few friends who send it to three other people on the board by accident,
yeah.
That's a violation by the district attorney of Middlesex County.
Right.
I think that that's a chance social meeting.
It's
not a deliberation. It's not a verbal deliberation. A deliberation has to be verbal.
No. What they say is you treat email like any other kind of communication. I had, actually in Essex County, I had a situation where it was a tri-district that were part of, they were part of a union district, and one of the school committees wanted to secede from the union, so they were actually communicating among each other. But the school committee person made a mistake and pressed the wrong button, and it went to everyone in the union. So that was clearly a violation of the open meeting law. The district attorneys have taken the position that if school committee people are conversing among themselves, even if they're doing it through intermediaries, that that's a violation of the open meeting law.
But an intermediary can be just a chance. I mean, you know how emails propagate themselves.
Absolutely.
But that's why I want, I mean, we've recently seen a decision in Virginia which treats email differently. And that's the direction I would like this board to pursue, because I just think that these current rules discourage the use of innovative technologies. And in a sense, they punish us for discussing anything with our neighbors, because as emails do propagate themselves, there's a chance we all run in similar social circles. It's a small town.
Well, I haven't seen that particular opinion, but if you wrote to your neighbor, just to your neighbor, are they saying that that violates the open meeting
law? No. If I email my neighbor, who happens to send it to three people, who send it to four people, who send it to six people, if it eventually gets back to three other people on this board, the DA, the district attorney, considers that a violation of the open meeting law.
I'll give you another example. Carl and I serve on a committee composed of other parts of the town too, mm-hmm. chartered by the Board of Selectmen regarding our community access cable.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to say something right now that was an opinion about how that process should evolve, and a quorum of that committee happened to hear it, we just had the same violation.
Happened
if it
to hear
is a violation.
It? Okay.
That's ridiculous.
Well, I'm just explaining to you what the law is. Now, it's interpreted by different district attorneys. The Essex County District Attorney has a different opinion from the Middlesex County District Attorney. I would say that I think Middlesex is probably the strictest of all the district attorneys.
So they all have a different interpretation. So in other words, the fact is that
they interpret the law for
right.
their county.
That's why I still think this board needs a challenger. If you read the law itself, it talks about a corporal convenient for the purpose of deliberations, and deliberations are defined as a verbal exchange.
Right.
So you cannot have a verbal exchange on email.
Tell you what, Naomi, because to keep things moving,
okay.
Pat, you'll give her forward the information that Pete and John are referencing, and we can go from there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
No problem.
Quorum is a majority of the governmental body. If a school committee establishes a study committee with policy-making jurisdiction, that would be considered a governmental body. Telephone polling, that's prohibited. And also emails involving substantive decisions.
Could you go back to that, the last one?
Yeah.
Polling?
Telephone polling.
By whom?
Not by, let's say Carl wanted to find out where someone was on a certain issue, and he called different people on the school committee. Right.
Okay.
On the board.
Right. Of each other on the committee.
Yes, and that used to be done all the time, let me tell you. If Carl has to call to see if there's enough people to go to a meeting, that's okay. Well, I don't know, in the other counties, it's really okay. You know, just procedural issues are not a problem. A chance social meeting is not covered. What are your obligations to the public? The meeting must be open to the public. Minutes must be taken and available to the public. What do the minutes need to say? The date, the time, the place, who was present, votes. You have to vote in open session, and any other items discussed. And we'll discuss votes in executive session at a later point. Next slide, please.
Excuse me, Naomi, one quick thing. In reference to minutes.
Yep.
I don't know if you've had a chance to look at how we do our minutes as opposed to other towns.
No.
Because sometimes I don't want the person taking the minutes may give an interpretation of what they perceive as being like the tone of a particular meeting. Is that the gray area?
Minutes should just be factual to reflect what was discussed.
Okay.
When we get into executive session, there's no requirement that you take verbatim minutes in executive session. In fact, I recommend against it. You're required to note in the minutes what was discussed and if there were any votes taken and what the roll call votes were.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
The district attorneys say you can't wait until you approve minutes to release them. If you get a request to release them, you should release them if they're physically available. Okay. Now, what is the public entitled to at a meeting? The public isn't entitled to speak at a meeting unless you have in your own policies a citizen speak. Do you have that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So with a citizen speak, that would regulate who's allowed to speak at a meeting. But the presiding officer must give the individual member of the public the permission to speak. And there's been a lot of confusion with that. The presiding officer controls the meeting, decides who can speak and when they can speak and for how long they can speak, unless it's a public hearing.
The wording of that statement says that the presiding officer must give
permission. It's permission. That's what was intended.
The presiding officer doesn't have a choice?
No. No. The presiding officer can decide whether or not to permit someone to speak. Sorry about the word.
It's like a better job every day.
They have to make the interpretation. They have to make that decision, though.
That's right.
In other words, the person cannot speak unless they are given permission from
That's
the
right.
presiding officer.
Unless it's a public hearing and you're required to have public hearings on your budget. Okay. What's the notice requirement? 48 hours notice, excluding Sundays and holidays, except an emergency. What's an emergency? It's not, gee, we just couldn't get together. This is the only time we can meet. Or our grant is due. We knew about it 3 months ago, but all of a sudden it hit us. It's got to be a real emergency. Notice must be filed with the city clerk and posted. If you meet at a regular time, you know, on a Monday evening, let's say, first and third or something like that, I would just recommend that you just post them at the beginning of the year. And a lot of school committees do that. Next slide, please. Executive session. When you post the notice, there's no requirement that you post an agenda, although some towns want you to post an agenda. There might be something in the bylaws, but you just have to post when you're holding the meeting and what time. No requirement that you post an executive session, unless your town bylaws require that. Very, very simple process. Okay, executive session. You must always convene an open session. Majority of members must vote on a roll call vote to go into executive session. The chairman must cite the purpose of the executive session. You can't say, we're going into executive session to discuss let's say, to discuss negotiations with non-union personnel. You really should be more specific as to which non-union personnel you're going to into executive session with. I had a client who went into executive session to discuss potential litigation, and the district attorney said you really should have provided the name of the subject matter of what you were discussing in executive session.
Well, that could show your hand right there.
Yeah.
I mean, if you wanted to go into executive session to discuss potential litigation, you know, oh, by the way, and it's with Joe Smith.
The burden would be on you to demonstrate why the release of that specific information would hurt the school committee. In one situation, I had a client that was trying to determine whether to sue the contractor over a waste facility plant at one of their schools. Mm-hmm. And they argued persuasively and convinced the DA, it was in Essex County, that if they had released that information, they would have tipped their hand. But in general, the district attorneys like you to say the purpose of the meeting. And you can't go into executive session with your lawyer and say that it's to discuss litigation just because you're meeting with your lawyer. A lot of places have tried that and failed. It has to be ripe litigation. It can't just be, oh, someone's threatening to sue us 2 years from now. But let's talk about the purposes.
I'm sorry, yeah. Naomi. I want to make sure I understand this.
Yeah.
So we could sit there and we're going to say that we're going into executive session to discuss a lawsuit against Teacher X. And we got to name Teacher X?
No. You could say you're going in to discuss a lawsuit involving personnel or a discrimination matter.
But we don't have to say discrimination against Teacher X?
No. You don't have to name. You could say a staff member.
You can just say staff
yep.
member. Okay.
Any questions about that? Okay. What are the purposes of this executive session? To discuss the reputation, character, physical condition, or mental health of an individual. Trick question. Performance has to be done in open session. And tell me, whose performance can you discuss as a school committee?
Pass.
That guy, right? and that has to be done in open session. You, as school committee members under Ed Reform, no longer have access to the personnel files and evaluations of staff that work for the superintendent. To consider the discipline or dismissal or to hear complaints or charges brought against a public officer, employee, staff member, or individual. And if under these two exemptions, you have to give the individual 48 hours notice, and they have certain rights, and that's included in the outline. To discuss strategy with respect to collective bargaining or litigation. And with litigation, you have to show how the having this discussion in open session would have a negative impact on the litigation. To discuss the deployment of security personnel or devices. I had a school system that had a major drug problem in their schools, and they decided to put in undercover agents, and they were challenged by the paper, and the district attorney said that was a very appropriate exemption. To investigate charges of criminal misconduct or to discuss the filing of criminal complaints, to consider the purchase, exchange, lease, or value of real estate property. To comply with the provisions of any general or special law or federal grant and aid. The most common situation there would be if you were going to discuss a matter involving a student, and you would be impacting the student records regulation and FERPA. So you could do that in executive session. The next one was a big deal before Ed Reform, and that was people would have screening committees, and school committees would have screening committees for all kinds of positions. And the question was, when did you have to conduct these interviews in open session? And the argument was that you would lose a lot of people because if they knew that their name was going to be disclosed, then they wouldn't want to apply. So that exemption was put into the law. It's no longer really that relevant because most of the staff hiring and administrator hiring fall within the superintendent. Superintendent's committees are not subject to the open meeting law, and to meet or confer with a mediator. So we've gone through that really quickly, and I'd be glad to answer questions about that. What are the remedies? A three-citizen suit has to be filed within 21 days. The court can void the transaction. Doesn't happen very often. And then, next slide, please. District attorney will issue an opinion letter. I might initiate some court action, which would void the action, and join the board from acting upon the decision, order the deliberations be repealed. There are no monetary fines available when the district attorney is involved. So, any questions? You also have a very detailed outline, and please review it. I'm going to come next week and give you a test. If you have any questions about this or any of the cases, I'd be glad to share the information with you. Public records, you know about those? There's, okay.
We know about that.
All right. I've attached a the interpretation of the Wakefield case. It's at the back of your material. Mm-hmm. And under that, that was also a Supreme Judicial Court case. It's funny, Beverly and Wakefield are both my clients, but that was a Supreme Court case. A teacher was investigated for a disciplinary matter involving a student. The teacher was suspended, and the Wakefield Taxpayers Foundation wanted to see the discipline record and the superintendent's notes and the recommendations. It went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said that personnel records are exempt from disclosure. And that was a big change in terms of the position that the public records agency was saying. They were saying the personnel files and personnel records of public employees are public records. So that's changed now. Personnel information is exempt from disclosure under the public records law. And I've also included an opinion from the Department of Education's legal counsel indicating that the school committee no longer has any control or role in the discipline of school department employees.
Now, that public records question, does that include student records also?
Well, student records are exempt from disclosure under FERPA and under the
grade book.
Pardon me?
For example, a teacher's grade book.
Teacher's grade book is actually, there's a separate section of the personnel student records regulations. If the teacher doesn't share that grade book with anyone, if it's just the teacher's grade book, then it's not even a student record.
Naomi,
yes.
Someone just put in a public request for us wanting the list of students in particular classrooms. We can't give that, correct?
Actually, it's directory information. The students' names and addresses constitute directory information.
And
in a particular class?
No, you can give it.
In a particular class, like these 25 kids are in class A, 26 through 50 with their names?
It's directory information.
All right, I'm just asking. Yeah.
You've got
what
to
grade?
Be kidding me.
What grade is it?
Four.
Elementary.
Okay. I want to check on the elementary. Clearly, under high school, there's a whole process you're supposed to use with your handbook. You're supposed to ask people if they would object to having their name released. And remember, under No Child Left Behind, which we didn't even get into, there's a provision in there dealing with recruiters, Army recruiters.
Right.
And there's a presumption that that kind of directory information is public information unless a parent makes a specific request that it not be released.
I mean, a list of a minor child.
Yes.
It can be considered a public record.
Directory information, and I'll send Pat the specific provision of the student records regulation.
I'm stunned to the point where I would ask the superintendent never to comply with that request.
Well, you have to send out
legal action. I mean, just think about this. In a school system, you could publish to someone who wanted to go after, you know, in a kidnapping situation. Maybe it's their own child they don't have custody of. What do they want? They want to know everyone in the third grade, so I know exactly what teacher they're in.
Okay.
I request the information, and it comes to me.
I'm going to check for the elementary level. Clearly, in the high school, there's a procedure in place that was passed through No Child Left Behind.
Could you get that? Excuse me. Could you get that to him very quickly because we aren't a timeline on
okay.
that.
Yeah.
It's a pending request. That's
we have
okay.
a pending
all
request.
Right.
Somebody wants all the fourth and fifth grade lists and assignments in one of our elementary schools.
Okay. Which haven't even been distributed, by the way, to those children because they don't get it until
okay.
they're not finalized. They don't get it until last day of school. So a person requested information that not only has not been finalized, but hasn't been given to the children and their parents yet. And
okay.
Someone wants that list.
I will.
That will get you up to speed. On the
all right.
Okay. I'm fired up because my kids are on that list.
Anyone said John has something?
Yes.
I've got another one that's been an issue for several years. It's not nearly as urgent as that one, but we need to think about it if indeed this directory information concept is as far-reaching as what I thought I heard you say. We have, as a school department, we have declined to publish lists of which graduating seniors are going to which universities.
Mm-hmm.
Or even which graduating seniors have been accepted by which universities. There's been a feeling that there's a privacy issue there. We will publish lists of, you know, look at the 150 schools that our kids got accepted to.
Yep.
No names are attached. That's been the solution.
Okay.
And for a while we had a reporter for one of the local papers who was gathering that information individually and putting it out, and some people didn't like that.
What about your yearbooks? Are they in the library?
Those are printed in October.
Okay.
And they don't say where the kid will be next year for the convenience of a stalker. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's also, I didn't include this in the material. I didn't think we were going to get into student records, but you know, there's also a provision for non-custodial parent and a policy that you've adopted and protocol that the superintendent and the principals need to follow in terms of release of records and even addresses.
Right.
Naomi, the only thing I can tell you about writing is you need to be prepared for anything.
Okay.
You never know what's going to come at you.
So. Let me tell you, I've had all kinds of funny situations in many different communities.
We hope so. So, Elaine, did you have a question? You're
I
all
got
set.
It. Yeah.
Okay. Does anyone have anything else?
No. I. As you can see, my particular interest.
Yes, I understand. Yep.
Is the open meeting law violation by use of email, sending it to non-members.
Right.
I would say that you're not alone in this. Many of my school committee members have concerns with the way the law is construed.
I'd personally like to use it as a test case. I'd like to push this as far as possible, at some point with permission of the board.
Okay. So, Naomi, are you going to get back to us on those two? Pete's mission in life.
Yes.
And
elementary public
okay. records.
Okay. Student records.
Student records.
Yes.
We have no approval of minutes. Correct?
No minutes this evening, no.
Okay. Hang on one second. Maureen? Not Beverly tonight. Maureen. The last meeting, are those minutes physically ready?
No.
Okay. That was one of the requests, and I know it came up tonight, that if minutes are not physically ready, even though we haven't voted on them, we can't release them.
No.
Okay.
They have to exist in order for you to release
them. Right. Okay.
They have to exist and be voted on?
No.
Oh,
we don't have to
exist.
Vote on them,
okay.
As long as they physically exist.
We mark them as draft, because that's what they are.
Right. Okay.
And remember, with the public records request, they make it to you, and then if you don't release it within 10 days, then they go to the Secretary of State's office, so.
Yeah, we're familiar with that,
okay.
too. no, but, you know, so there's a new person that has requested a tremendous amount of material, and I just want to make sure that we're doing everything correct.
You also realize you can charge for the material?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, we're, yeah. Yeah, we figured out, we got that one.
Can we ask another minutes question?
Sure.
I hope I can answer.
What if a citizen says something at hearings of citizens and delegations present, and that it is recorded in the minutes, and then the citizen takes exception with how it was described in the minutes?
It's your meeting, it's your minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that was the reason for my question in terms of an interpretation of, you know, where if there's not the quotes around their comments, whether or not that's an area we don't want to get into. Pat?
Mr. Chairman, I think what I'll be doing is having Naomi review our minutes of the last few months, take a look, give us some guidance in terms of staying consistent with the statutes and the laws regarding that.
We're just looking to clean it up, and
exactly.
if it needs to be cleaned up, and I'm not sure it does.
Right.
So, just to be safe and sorry.
Some guidance.
Yeah, it's fine. Pete, did you have something else?
Just one question. There is a particular issue that I'd like to ask a question about. It is an executive session issue. I don't know if Naomi's available for the executive session for this one, but it has to do with a contract issue.
We can add
a potential issue, but I can't describe it.
I'll add it to the list.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pat can stay. Pat can stay. Naomi can stay. I apologize.
I'm here.
You ready for the motion?
He's his office.
Rob, you got something?
A motion to move into executive session for the purposes of negotiating with non-union personnel, specifically administrators and non-union secretaries. And the second reason is potential litigation.
Second.
All right, roll call vote. Elaine?
Yes.
John?
Aye.
I vote yes.
Yes.
Rob? Lisa and Pete?
Yes.
Yeah. We would not be returning to regular session thereafter.
All righty. Thank you all.